Screen Gems, a Sony Pictures Entertainment company. Screen Gems presents a Hal Lieberman Company production. Vacancy. Kate Beckinsale. Luke Wilson. Frank Worley. Ethan Embry. Written by Mark L. Smith. Directed by Nimrod Antal. All the names of the credits swirl and recede to form a large red maze on a black background. Then it fades into a car's rear number plate as the vehicle drives along a deserted country road at night. Car's headlights blaze as it drives along the dark winding road, surrounded by shadowy trees. As the car cruises onwards, its driver, a good-looking dark-haired man, rubs his mouth wearily. David looks across at his attractive dark-haired wife, Amy, sleeping in the seat next to him. A raccoon, feeding on something in the middle of the road, suddenly causes David to swerve violently. The car spins round and comes to a halt, missing the creature.
Son of a bitch!
What are you doing?
It's a goddamn raccoon in the middle of the road. Jesus.
Well, better to kill us than get a little roadkill on the car, huh?
Well, we're still alive. I can tell by the pissy look that you're giving me.
She drinks from a plastic bottle, looking annoyed. The raccoon snuffles away into the night as David starts the car up again and drives back onto the road to continue their journey. David rubs his hand over his face again, and Amy frowns.
This isn't the interstate.
There was a wreck. It was all backed up. I took a shortcut.
To where?
Did you hear that?
Hear what?
I think the engine just made a noise.
Well, it's kind of late for a breakdown. Should have stopped somewhere earlier.
Yeah, well, I popped some of those trucker pills. I thought I could make it the whole way.
Where are we?
Amy cuts an apple.
Well, you were really dreaming over there earlier. You're mumbling, jerking around.
I dreamt you were trying to kill me. You're at my parents' anniversary party, and my mother wouldn't stop talking. You started screaming you couldn't take it anymore, and then you tried to strangle me.
Hey, at least you're dreaming about me, right? That's kind of an improvement.
Shit.
Jesus. You okay? I keep telling you how stupid that is to do that. You ought to just kind of bite into the apple like the rest of the world.
It hurts my teeth.
As bad as cutting your finger off?
Just anything. You want me to try for a while?
No, I don't. I can just go ahead and go back to sleep.
The clock on the car's radio reads 1:25 a.m. as he tries to tune it. Unable to get a good signal, he gives up and switches the radio off again. Tired, he rubs his eyes and face as the empty road continues to roll out of the darkness in the beam of the headlights.
Remember how Charlie used to dance around even when there's no music playing? Oh, it's
really... Tired.
Amy looks out of her window as David keeps his weary eyes on the road ahead. The road weaves between dark trees. David points at a spot on the map that Amy's holding.
See, I think that should be us just about there.
Why don't you just stay on the interstate?
I don't know. Guess I just wanted to make this as miserable as possible, you know? See just how big a bitch you'd be about it. I just thought it would be faster, you know? Shit.
Is there something?
As he listens to the sounds from the car's engine, David watches the lights of a lonely petrol station and motel. An illuminated sign on the petrol station's roof reads, "Gas." The lights are on, but no one seems to be around.
You think they're closed?
Since 1957.
It's too bad, because they got good gas prices.
Look, if you're too tired, I'll drive.
I told you, I'm fine. Okay, see, that town there... Elida. You were asleep, but we went through there about 3 hours ago.
Well, that should put us down here somewhere.
I mean, that's a town, Downey. I mean, they would have a real gas station.
If that's really where we are.
I think that we're headed south. I mean, eventually we've got to...
Oh, my God!
Jesus. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I got to me right before I headed out.
Oh, sorry.
I gotta warn you, though, the gas price is a little steeper than the sign says.
Actually, we're having some engine problems.
Yeah, he dodged a squirrel a few miles back.
It's a raccoon.
And
yeah.
We're lost.
Well, she's lost. I actually know exactly where we are. We're on our way to Downey.
The man looks back the way they've come.
Yeah, he's trying to tell you it's the other way, David.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Okay.
It's really easy to get turned around out here without a map. Oh. Downey's like 30 miles back, man.
Really?
I'll tell you what. Pop the hood. I'll check the engine and make sure you can get that far.
Really?
That
thanks. Okay, great.
Thank you so much.
As the man opens the bonnet, David gets out.
Yeah, I went off the road there when I hit the raccoon.
Amy's eyes begin to glisten with tears suddenly, and as she pulls down the sun visor to look in its mirror, a photo falls out. It shows her smiling at a happy little boy, aged around 5. She strokes the boy's image with her thumb. The photo triggers a pang of emotion, and she wipes her tears away. As the man works on the engine with a relaxed smile, David climbs back into the driver's seat.
Is he gonna fix it?
What do you think?
Well, the fan blade bent. Rock must have hit it.
Yeah, she'll drive fine, just noisy, that's all. You might want to have someone smarter than me take a look at it when you get where you're going, though.
I'll do that, thanks. So now what do I owe you?
Oh, no, nothing. No, we're good. Hell, I should pay you for finally giving me something to do. Now,
Do you need help getting back to Downey?
Yes.
Well, actually, if you could just point us towards the interstate, that'd be great.
Oh. Well, you don't want Downey then.
Okay.
I'll tell you what you do. You take this road here, right? And you follow it down until you hit a grove of trees on your right. You take that, keep going till you hit Westcliff. There'll be a four lane there.
Yeah,
make a left on that, and that'll take you where you need to be.
Okay. Thank
Perfect.
You.
Thanks a lot. And you know what? Man, I'd feel a lot better if you just took this. And
no.
Thanks for staying out and so late and helping us.
Well, you just bought yourself a $20 sparkly then. Because every day is 4th of July at Smalls. Owner makes me say that. There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
And drive careful.
Okay, thanks.
Amy's mood lightens and she smiles as she holds the sparkler the man just handed her. She holds the firework out of her window as they drive off. On the open road again, she watches the sparks being blown back by the wind.
Guess I ought to buy you a box of those sparklers, huh?
Amy's smile fades, and she drops the sparkler on the road.
So how far did he say this Westcliff place is?
Didn't. I can't even find it on the fucking map. David!
What, did we hit something? I'm
fucking... Yeah, probably another squirrel.
Damn. It was a fucking raccoon.
What?
I mean, Jesus Christ, what the...
As the car begins to slow down, David steers it onto the hard shoulder.
Bitch!
He thumps the steering wheel.
So much for being able to drive it the whole way.
Perfect. No signal.
Damn it.
Can a car run without a fan?
Evidently not.
David picks up a torch and gets out. With the car's yellow hazard warning lights flashing, he pulls on his jacket, walks to the front of the car, and opens the bonnet. As he shines his torch over the engine, its bulb dims a little, and he gives it a couple of taps.
Okay, give it a try for me, all right?
It's not gonna work.
Jesus Christ. Would you just give it a try for me, please, honey?
She shuffles over to the driver's side and turns the key.
Damn it.
Amy smiles a little.
So how far back was the gas station?
I know, about a mile. Kind of a long walk in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could just sit here and hope some idiots like us come along and give us a hand, huh?
I didn't get us lost.
No. You slept for 300 miles thanks to your Zoloft Prozac cocktail.
He doesn't see her give him the finger as he slams the bonnet and paces further along the road.
Fuck!
She smiles again.
Well, at least we know there's someplace back there.
Oh, yeah, the guy that helped us so much before.
Well, you know, you could get another sparkler, Amy.
Asshole.
Whatever you say.
Amy looks out of her window and realizes that David has begun to walk back along the road towards the petrol station. She picks up her bag and jacket and gets out. She slams the door behind her and heads off after David, leaving the car's hazard lights blinking in the darkness.
Never see stars anymore. At least not in L.A. Kind of nice out here, really. Bet Charlie would have liked it.
We should have brought him sometime. We never went anywhere. The job was always too important to leave.
Why do you do that?
What?
Every time I mention his name, you take a shot at
him. Well, stop mentioning his name.
Well, see, I'm not like you, Amy. I'd rather just kind of remember him and deal with the pain.
Okay, you know what, David? Do what you want.
He stops, watching her as she quickens her pace to walk alone. Together, they arrive back at the petrol station to find it in darkness.
You said he was getting ready to close, remember?
Shit.
Let's just go back to the car. You can sleep on the hood and stare up at the stars you love so much.
Well, maybe they'll know where we can find the guy.
Amy watches David head off, then goes after him. They pass the petrol station and make their way towards the motel. The lights outside its rooms and from reception shine in the darkness. Large illuminated signs glow against the black sky. David holds the reception door open for Amy, but when she holds back, he goes in first, moodily. They both step in, then pause, listening. Amy goes to walk out again, but David walks over to the front desk despite her protests. She tries to stop him ringing the bell, but he slaps the button with his other hand, irritating her. They see a shadow pass across a wall, and a slight man with a moustache and glasses peers through the door at them.
Sorry.
Hey, folks. How can I help?
Everything, okay back there?
Oh!
Just let me just go.
It's okay.
Sorry. Things get a little boring around here late nights.
I believe that. Say, there's a mechanic at the garage over there. He helped us with our car earlier. You know him?
I think he's gone home for the night. He'll probably be back tomorrow morning.
Right. Well, I was wondering if you could get in touch with him because the car actually broke down about 2 miles back there. We just walked up here.
I sure can't. I'm sorry.
Do you know another garage?
There's Clark's, about 20 miles east.
Okay. Well, may I borrow your phone? I'd like to give them a call, see if they can maybe come out and give us a hand.
Oh, all I got's a payphone right out there.
That's great.
She works on dimes if you need them.
Okay, I do.
The manager lifts a cash box onto the desk and checks the banknote David gives him.
It's real.
Although David smiles at the manager's comment, Amy just waits impatiently.
No, it doesn't have to be exact change. Mm-hmm.
The manager begins counting the coins out into David's hand.
Nope.
He swaps over one of the coins he's given David.
Thank you.
Trouble is, Clark's won't be open either. Not this late.
So I guess I don't need these, huh?
Not if you need a garage.
Yeah, we do.
But like I said, the guy over there will be back around 8. If you can wait that long, I'm sure he can get you up and running. Meanwhile, I'm wide open here.
Yeah?
Shocking.
Okay. Thanks. We can either stay here or we can walk all the way back to the car. Okay, well.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll go ahead and stay here. Thanks.
We'll give you two the honeymoon suite for $5 extra. It's got a few perks the others don't.
Regular room will be fine. Thank you.
What the heck? I'll give it to you for the same rate.
Well, whatever works. Whatever's fastest. All right, well, give me my card.
Ooh, we're not set up for plastic here, friend. Cash only.
Okay. I got cash. I guess you don't take dimes, though, do you?
The manager frowns in confusion.
Just kidding around.
I'm gonna need to see ID on one of you. Sort of a deposit on the room's
contents. Look, sir, you can trust us, okay? We're not gonna steal anything. I'm really not up to lugging a bunch of dirty towels back to the car in the morning, so.
I'm sure you won't. But rules are rules. I don't make them. I'm just the manager.
Of course. There you go.
It's right there in the corner, number 4. You might have to jiggle the handle a little bit to open her up. She's as sticky as an old whore.
Right.
Excuse my language, ma'am. Y'all have a great night.
Let's go.
Thank you.
The manager's face turns serious as he watches them walk out through the front door. He taps his fingers on his large guest book as he stares at them, then slips David's ID into his shirt pocket and puts the book under the desk. He picks up the TV remote he brought out from the back room, and with a last look in David and Amy's direction, slips through the door and closes it behind him. David opens the door to number 4, and Amy switches on the light. The room is simply furnished and decorated.
Oh, this is great.
Amy wanders through the large room as David puts a chain on the door.
Good thing we upgraded.
Amy switches the light on in the grimy bathroom, and a cockroach falls off the light switch. She puts her bag down on the sink in front of a large mirror as the cockroach scuttles under the carpet. She pops a pill in her mouth and turns on the tap, but the water that splatters out is muddy brown. She tips her head back, swallowing the pill. David's pacing the main room as she comes back in.
We've had our tetanus shots, right?
Oh, hey, if you want to know what's on March of 97, I got the answer.
They take their jackets off, and Amy pulls back the bedding to look underneath.
I'm sleeping in my clothes.
I'm going to sleep in my shoes. I guess it could be worse, you know. We could be stuck in that twin bed at your folks' house trying to pretend like we're a happy couple.
God, I should have told my mom about us.
Why ruin their party, though? I think the thing to do is just tell them after we've signed the papers. It felt really strange to be at that party. Watching them all celebrate being together all those years. How did it make you feel?
I know. Tired.
Sitting on the end of the bed, David takes his shoes off and looks back at Amy, sitting up against the headboard.
I'm sorry.
They look at each other.
Never should have gotten off the interstate either.
Miss our one last great adventure together.
Yeah.
With a sorrowful expression, David reaches out and strokes her leg. As he holds her gaze and smiles, she becomes uncomfortable.
Concierge.
Hello? Hello? There's no one there.
What the hell is that?
David gets up and walks to the door, then takes off the chain and opens it. There's no one there, so he looks around.
Hello?
He goes back in and closes the door.
You heard that, right?
Uh-huh.
Don't touch that. Who is it?
This time, the knocking's coming from an internal door leading to the next room.
Yeah?
David steps closer to the door, frowning.
David, don't.
It's coming from the room next door, Amy.
No, no, no.
He opens the door to find the closed one to the next room on the other side. David slams his hand against the closed door.
Yeah, what do you need?
Hello?
We walked over here. Were there any other cars in the parking lot? Just check.
Amy gets off the bed and goes to the window.
There's a truck. It's probably the manager guys.
Hesitantly, David knocks on the dividing door again.
I don't know what the deal is, but it's a little late for this shit, okay? So...
Close the door, David.
The door shakes violently.
Close the door! Damn it! Why mess with them?
I'm not messing with them. I'm just trying to figure out what they're doing.
David steps over to the front door, slides the chain back on, then looks through the spy hole.
Who is it?
He slowly opens the door a little bit, keeping the chain in place. The internal dividing door.
I know what your problem is, asshole!
David puts on his shoes. Amy picks up the phone. Finding the line dead, she shakes her head at David, who walks out and bangs on the front door to number 3.
Watch you open the door. Play some games. I'll play some fucking games with you. That's real fucking jerk off. Lock the door.
What?
I'm gonna go take care of this prick.
Amy slams the door and puts the chain on as David storms over to the motel reception. He goes in and rings the bell on the front desk. As he steps back to look over at the room, the manager appears at the front desk.
Everything all right, Mr. Fox?
No, because the asshole in the room right beside us keeps banging on the walls and he won't stop. You got any ideas?
The room beside you?
Yeah, room 3. I go over there to talk to the guy to try and get him to stop, but he just kind of keeps doing it. So, I gotta say, I don't know what his problem is.
That is very strange, seeing as you folks are the only guests I got in here tonight.
Well, somebody's in there, okay? And I gotta say, I'm pretty exhausted.
You sure it's room 3?
Yeah, we're in the corner, right? Number 4? Well, it's the room right beside us with a big rusty 3 on it, okay? So I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Every once in a blue moon, a college kid, a drifter will sneak in through the window for a good night's sleep. In the morning, the cleaning lady will find trash on the floor or shit in the toilet. Usually, they don't cause much of a disturbance, so...
Well, this one is, okay?
Let me go check it out for you.
And if those work, I'd think about bringing one.
Oh. I am as tired as shooting crows.
The seriousness creeps into the manager's face again as he watches David go. He turns to look up at a pair of old handguns mounted on the wall above the door to the back room. He reaches up and takes one down, then examines it, glancing over his shoulder briefly.
Okay.
Amy hurriedly opens the door.
He just thinks it's some drunk. He's gonna take care of it. Did you hear anything else?
No. I was kinda hoping I would, and then I know what they were.
I'm sure they just saw me walk over there and then they took off. Now we get to enjoy this luxury resort in peace and quiet.
David, maybe we should just leave. Just go back to the car.
I'm not gonna walk anymore tonight, okay? Let's just gut it out here for a few hours. We'll get the car fixed and we can just get the hell out of here. Okay?
Okay.
He switches on the TV.
You're not watching that right now.
Oh, why? Look, I'm just gonna unwind a little bit. And make sure the guy from next door is gone. You gotta take advantage of the perks. It's worth the extra $5. Where is it?
Gosh!
What is it?
This bathroom's disgusting.
Yeah?
David?
Yes?
The manager guy's definitely going over there, right?
Yeah, with the six shooter. He's gonna take care of it, so just relax. Gotta make sure his only two guests are happy. Like her library of classics.
David plays a video. It shows two masked men dressed in black strangling a man with ropes.
Jesus. But this really gets the honeymooners in the mood.
You turn that off. It's the last thing I need right now.
Well, at least they could do is give us a little porn.
David plays another tape.
Just mute it or something, so I don't have to hear it.
David frowns and looks closer at the screen. The video shows three young women being attacked by the two masked men. Noting the curtains that one of the women is cowering behind, he turns and realizes the same curtains are hanging at the window. Sitting on the bed, Amy loosens her long brown hair as David stares intensely at the film. As the scantily clad women are attacked by the two men, David recognizes the TV set on the dresser in the image as the one he's watching now.
I told you to turn it off.
In horror, he realizes he and Amy are in the same room that the women were in.
What is it? David?
Do you see that room from the movie?
What about it?
Amy begins to recognize the bed she's sitting on is the one in the video, as well as the lantern star lights hanging against the wall. Filling with dread, she gets up suddenly and stands next to David.
What movie is that?
I don't fucking know.
David peers into a vent high in the wall in a corner of the room. On the other side of the slats, right in front of him, a camera's lens revolves as it focuses. He peers at the wall under a table and sees another camera behind a vent near the floor.
David, is that this room?
It sure looks like it. Oh,
this has to be some kind of a joke, right?
All three women are dead.
That can't be real. That can't be real.
Amy puts in another tape. It shows a couple looking around the room fearfully as loud bangs come from the front door. In the video, the room's lights flicker. One of the attackers bursts in wearing a ghoulish face mask and lunges at the man. Suddenly the power goes, plunging David and Amy into darkness and cutting out the TV. Comes on again briefly, then goes, causing the lights to blink on and off. The chain rattles on the door as David protects Amy, backing up against a wall. The lights come up again, revealing one of the attackers in the bathroom. The lights blink out, then on again, but the man has gone.
Come on, please.
David turns off the TV.
Okay, we gotta get out of here, all right? All right, wait, hold on. Whoever was outside, they heard the TV, right? So they know we watched it, right?
That asshole put us in here to watch it. He was never gonna help us, he was part of it.
I know, so they know we fucking watched it. They know we're gonna try and run, they're gonna be waiting.
Then maybe they don't know that we caught him.
No, wait a second. He knows.
He's the one now. hear you. They should sneak out the door.
Amy, they're not just gonna fucking let us stroll out there and call the cops.
Well, they're not gonna let us just sit in here either.
Fuck.
Amy sees the apple she cut a segment from by the sink.
David.
What?
Did you bring this?
No.
Well, I didn't bring it either.
Didn't you bring that in from the car?
No, I bled all over it, remember? I wouldn't have brought it. I left it in the car. What's happening?
David edges up to the closed shower curtain and reaches a hand slowly towards it. There's no one behind it.
How did they get in here?
I don't know. Dim the lights.
What are we doing?
We're leaving.
Amy switches the lights off as David looks outside.
Okay, when we get outside, we're gonna go to the trees, okay? They can't see us. We gotta move fast, Amy. Okay.
David opens the door softly and slowly peers out. Cautiously, he leads Amy by the hand onto the motel walkway that runs past each of the rooms. They look out across the car park through a decorative lattice.
Okay, we're gonna run right over there, right? Just stay with me.
They run out into the dark together, holding hands, but stop short suddenly in terror.
Oh my God!
Out of the blackness in front of them steps a tall man wearing a greenish, close-fitting face mask. The man runs after them. The second attacker blocks their way and they change direction. Amy drops her mobile and tries to stoop for it, but David drags her onwards. They reach the door to their room. David struggles furiously to open it as one of the attackers crushes Amy's mobile underfoot. They get in and slam the door just in time. As the door bursts open on its chain, David shoves it closed.
Get the bathroom window open.
Please, Bill, shut up.
Just try, okay? Turn off the light.
Amy turns off the bathroom light and frantically starts trying to force open the nailed shut window. The key falls to the floor and she picks it up. A masked face at the window. His face gleaming with sweat, David turns to Amy wide-eyed, then frowns.
Ah, leave us alone!
David turns to face the door tentatively, then steps back from it. Amy watches him from the other side of the room as he leans closer to look through the spy hole. The car park looks deserted.
I don't see anybody.
Well, they wouldn't just leave.
No, they wouldn't.
He turns to the internal door to number 3.
David, don't. They were in there.
He opens it and checks the other one is closed.
If they want to come in here, they're going to come in here. It doesn't matter. We got to find another way out of here right now.
David stares out through the bathroom window and sees a figure rushing through the darkness. He comes back into the main room and rubs his chin.
I need to get to that phone.
No, you're not going out there.
Listen, Amy, it's a real phone, okay?
It'll have to work. You're not going to get to it, please. David, don't go out there.
Look, if we stay here, we're going to wind up like all of them. Please. You know, we know that they're outside watching that window. If we can just keep their attention on that, it'll give me time to get to the phone.
How can we do that?
They stare at each other. Reluctantly, Amy goes to the bathroom window and does her best, through her fear, to make it look like she's trying to get the window open. David makes his way outside, sidestepping quietly while scanning the motel courtyard. A dark figure shoots past the bathroom window. David's shirt is drenched with sweat as he reaches the end of a thick trellis that runs in front of the motel room doors. He races across the gravel drive to the phone box. As he shuts the door, a light comes on, so he opens it again.
I'm sorry.
As Amy goes through the motions of trying the window latch and shaking the frame, a masked figure appears outside, making her sink back with fear. Trembling, she tries the window again.
We need some help. Some people are trying to kill us.
Where are you located, sir?
Me and my wife are at this motel, the Pinewood Motel. It's near the mountains. They got us trapped.
Who has you trapped, sir?
I don't know. We just need help. The Pinewood Motel.
Yes, sir. Do you have an address?
No, I don't. It's near some signboard. Jesus Christ, look it up.
You're going to need to settle down, sir. You'll never survive if you lose control, Mr. Fox. And you shouldn't be wandering around in the dark by yourself.
Headlights sweep across the phone box, and David leaps out just as a car smashes into it. He races back towards the motel room with the car hot on his heels. Amy pulls back the curtain, and when she realizes David's coming back, she opens the door. He throws himself inside, and as he lands in a heap, she shuts and locks the door. They kiss.
Did you get anyone on the phone?
Hearing the car pull off, they get to their feet.
Why the fuck are they doing this?
Listen, come on. It's getting light. They're gonna want this to be over soon, okay? We need something, some scissors, anything, okay? What about the knife from your app?
It's in the car.
They frantically search the dressers in the room, but every drawer is empty.
Nothing.
In the bathroom, David takes a towel from a shelf and wraps it around his fist. He punches the mirror and shards of glass fall into the basin.
This will have to do.
You're bleeding.
Wrapping a large shard with a flannel, he leads Amy out of the bathroom, and they drop down in a dark corner of the room. Perspiration glistens on their faces.
What do you think they're doing?
I think they're enjoying themselves.
David is staring directly into one of the hidden cameras. In the motel office, the manager is sitting before a bank of TV screens and editing equipment. He's watching David and Amy while tapping away at a control panel. Turning away from the screens, he gets up from his seat. Videotapes are scattered over the desk.
You let me fall asleep.
Yeah, it's all right. It's just because of your pills.
Oh, I have to be awake.
I need you to stay there.
What?
They're watching you. And they're listening. I didn't want them to watch what I was doing, but they need to see you, okay? So they don't think we're trying to get out. Okay?
Oh, wait, what are you doing?
Going through the tapes. They have cameras everywhere, even outside. Then they edit them all together. Remember the screaming from the TV the guy was watching in the office? I'm sure it was one of these. It's not enough that they rob and kill these people. They want to watch it, too.
Why are you watching them?
Looking for mistakes. These people, they weren't smart. They thought the room would protect them, and it won't. They can come in anytime they want. They just watch until they get bored. See, right there. It happens in almost every one of these. He just shows up.
Well, how'd he get inside? He wasn't in here before. I didn't come through the door.
I can't tell from the others, but with this angle, right there, it's the bathroom. And that's where your apple came from. Just stay here.
He walked slowly past her into the bathroom. Shadows make the drab room more sinister as David pulls the meager curtain across the tiny window. He turns. His attention is drawn to a vent on the wall. Then he moves a storage box in front of another lower one. Standing on the bath, he puts the shower curtain back up, shielding his actions from the view of a camera that might be hidden in the vent. He steps down. Hearing the hollow sound, he looks down at the bath mat beneath his feet. He stamps on it a few times, then pulls it back to reveal a trapdoor underneath. Glancing around the room a little, he moves the filthy mat to one side and reaches for the round metal handle on the trapdoor. Slowly, he lifts the hatch. A dark space is revealed beneath the floorboards, and he leans his head in to get a good look. They go to the window to discover a lorry driver has pulled into the forecourt.
Come on. Wait. We don't know who he is.
He's right out of this place.
Yeah, unless he's one of them. I mean, what the fuck's he doing here so late?
Maybe he's lost. That could happen. It looks like he's been driving a long time. He's not one of them. He could help us. Come on.
Wait.
She bangs on the window.
Help!
The truck driver notices them and checks around him. He hesitates before taking a few steps towards them. He seems unsure of what to do. Two masked men are walking behind him.
Wasn't sure you're gonna make it.
You got them all?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's good stuff.
Oh my God.
Okay, come on, come on.
He takes her to the hatch.
Okay, go.
What's in there?
Go, come on.
They have a torch, and David shines it into the darkness below. Amy drops down into the shaft's gloomy tunnel, and David follows, closing the hatch behind them.
We can't go in there. We don't know what's in there.
We don't have any choice. Amy, we have to do this, okay? Come on. Just follow me. I'm gonna lead us out of here. It's gonna be okay. It's just gonna lead us out of here.
The tunnel is low and muddy, with a string of light bulbs stretching out before them. Patches of light from the bulbs punctuate the darkness, and as David crawls away from her, Amy reluctantly follows. The beam of the torch jostles about in David's hand as he scrabbles on, and he slows momentarily as they reach a junction. The tributary tunnel equally illuminated by a string of bulbs. They forge ahead.
I can't. I have to go back.
Hey, we can't. They're gonna be waiting for us.
I can't breathe.
Yes, you can, right? Just close your eyes. Grab a hold of my leg. I'm gonna lead us. It's not much further.
Come on.
David suddenly rears up.
Shit!
What? What's the matter?
You can't scream, baby.
What?
They're gonna hear you if you scream, okay? Just keep moving. We're almost there.
The tunnel is crawling with rats. Amy has a number of the creatures on her back, and they set off again, David grimacing as he powers through the scurrying rats. They make it past the rats.
I see something.
What is it?
Door, maybe.
A shaft leading up to a hatch. He lifts the trapdoor a little and peers through the gap, but hearing voices lets it drop shut again. He opens the hatch again, wider this time. Glancing up, he spots the TV screens. They're in the manager's office next to his editing desk. Opening the hatch fully, he takes in the killing of an older man, showing on one of the screens marked Camera 1. Discarding the hatch door, he reaches down for his torch, then pulls himself up into the office. An elderly man in the snuff tape cowers on the floor of the motel room. David helps Amy up through the hatch, then replaces the trapdoor. They study the array of screens, and each look round when someone is violently stabbed just off camera on one of the monitors. They make their way out of the office through an adjoining drab bedsit room. David opens another door, and they find themselves in reception. They peer through the door, then step back inside the bedsit room. She goes back through to the office while he checks the reception area. On a desk table, Amy finds a phone.
They're trying to kill us.
I need your name and location.
The manager and one of his masked heavies burst into the office. Amy and David have gone.
Okay. Well, they're out there somewhere.
Ma'am? Hello? I need your name and location, ma'am. Ma'am?
The manager spots the phone off the hook, listens in, then slams it down.
Get down there after him!
As one of his masked accomplices drops down into the tunnel, the manager stuffs the phone wire into his pocket. Adjusting his glasses, he storms out through the reception.
They're under us!
David and Amy are back in the tunnel. One of the killers drops expertly through the hatch in David and Amy's bathroom. As David and Amy push themselves on, the two masked killers in different parts of the tunnel speed along on their hands and knees in a way that suggests they are very familiar with the grim labyrinth. David and Amy reach another exit, and as he investigates it, Amy glances down the tunnel nervously. Elsewhere, one of the masked men stops at a junction. David makes his way up a ladder at the exit, and Amy follows him. They find themselves in a dusty store across the forecourt from the motel reception. The hatch is behind the shop counter, and David removes all of the loose items from around the till while Amy catches her breath. Shh. Moving round to the other side of the heavy wooden counter, David grabs a steady hold of it and pushes it over, covering the hatch. Amy leans on her knees as David creeps over to the window. They're both covered in dirt and sweat.
I'll find us in here.
Well, we can't try to run. Not yet. We have to let them think we got away, let them go after us. Then we can try to run.
What if they look in here first?
Jesus, Amy, I don't know. I'm doing the best I can over here.
She hangs her head as she sobs, and David crawls over to her.
Sorry for him, the one that got off the interstate.
No, I mean for everything else. I'm sorry about us. And about Charlie. We should have made sure that Kate was up. I should never let him down the stairs.
It's not your fault, okay? None of it was. It was an accident. Please. You have to stop blaming yourself.
Holding his face in her hands, they kiss as they tremble. Hearing a car, they go to the window. A police officer has arrived.
It's the 911.
Hold on. It could be one of them, like the truck driver. When you call 911, you didn't tell them where we were. Why would they be here now?
Oh, maybe they traced the call.
Gosh, sure it came from here. It's just me tonight.
And you run the place?
Oh, yeah.
And I won't disturb anybody if I take a look around.
No. I haven't had a guest here in 3 nights.
They watch the officer as he walks along past the motel rooms with the manager close behind.
Slow season, huh?
Yeah. All four of them.
The officer shines his torch on the devastation caused when the car crashed through the phone box.
That happened tonight?
These goddamn kids come around and vandalize stuff. I just haven't gotten around to cleaning that up.
You're too busy with all the guests, huh?
That's right.
I probably should look in these rooms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The manager makes a meal of searching through his bunch of keys.
Wrong keys. Let me head back to the office. I'll be right back.
When he's gone, the officer discovers the room door is open, and he makes his way cautiously inside.
They're looking for us.
Maybe he's here to help us.
No, he isn't. He wouldn't just let him walk around like that.
The motel room light doesn't work. And the officer steps inside. His torchlight finds a TV set with a smashed screen. At the door leading to the next motel room, a sliver of glimmering light shines through the gap beneath it. He makes his way through to Amy and David's room.
Hello?
He finds the broken mirror shards on the bathroom floor and the entrance to the tunnels. He shines his light into the dark tunnel shaft.
When I called 911, it was the guy from the office that answered the phone.
One of the killers is trying to force the trap door beneath the store counter, and they lean on it to keep him out. Back in the motel room, the officer notices the scene playing out on the TV screen. He watches for a moment, then shines his torch around the gloomy room. As realization sinks in, he shakes and pulls out his gun. The killer at the trap door swings a knife at their ankles, but they manage to push him back down into the tunnel. They spot the officer coming outside. He's waving his gun from side to side.
He looks scared. I think he has one of the tapes.
He's gonna leave, David.
He's leaving!
They race out to the officer.
Get in the car!
They climb into the front of the squad car.
Go. How many are there?
Three, I think.
Come on, let's go. What's the matter?
Oh, I've got to make sure we can't leave.
Well, I'm not going to give them a choice. Stay here.
The officer goes round to the bonnet of the car and opens it. A wire has been cut. When he closes the bonnet, one of the killers is standing behind him. David and Amy watch with horror as he drives the knife into the policeman's back.
I had to drag him into this, did you? Might as well have stuck that knife into his back yourself.
In a room.
My God, they killed him! They killed him!
One of the men manages to force the door open, and David struggles to keep him out. The man's arm reaches in and grabs at David, but eventually he manages to slam the door shut and lock it. They race through each motel room, forcing the connecting doors between each one until they reach the end. David props a drying rail under the handle of the motel door, and they push a dresser in front of the adjoining one. In the bathroom, David wrenches a towel rail from the wall and uses it to smash the tiny window.
David, we're not going to fit through there!
He ignores her, then runs through to the front window to watch the killers pushing the squad car out of sight.
Can I hold me on the other side? We can get in the office to keep some guns there.
Stepping back, he glances round the room and his eyes are drawn to the ceiling. He grabs a bedside table and drags it to the middle of the room. Standing on it, he pushes in a loft hatch and hauls himself up a little to look into the roof space.
Okay, this is gonna work.
What?
Leave him a trail.
He rips her sweater and leaves the material hooked on a shard of window glass.
They'll think you made it out the window. They won't look up here. Come on, get up here.
He helps her into the roof space. She closes the loft hatch, and he pushes the bedside table back. Looking down at him through a gap in the ceiling, she wipes away a tear. He steps back and rubs his face. Glancing up at the ceiling again, he moves the clothes area away from the door. Amy's view is limited through the small crack. He opens the door of motel room number one, just a fraction, and peers out. As soon as he opens it fully, one of the killers lunges at him, driving a knife hard into his belly. Amy's eyes widen and she stifles a scream as he falls heavily to the motel room floor. The other thug smashes his way through the adjoining door, a large knife in his hand. Trembling violently, David uses all of his strength to drag himself towards the door and out onto the concrete pathway. His face bulges with the strain as the manager comes to stand next to him, filming him with a handheld camera. David looks up at him, his face captured on the film, and the manager shakes off a nervous eye twitch before shutting the camera off.
All right, get her out here. Let's do this thing.
Amy stifles her sobs as she watches the men search the room beneath her. The manager goes into the bathroom and discovers the piece of clothing snagged on the window. He studies the window frame for a moment, then lets out a deep sigh.
Go find her.
The two masked men leave the motel room, and when the manager goes to follow them, he hesitates beneath Amy. He glances back behind him as if he's heard something, but then leaves the room. David is still lying in the doorway. When she's sure the coast is clear.
Oh.
Sitting back in the darkness of the roof space, she clamps her hands over her mouth as she sobs. Night turns to day at the motel, and Amy wakes on a wooden board in the roof to find a thick chunk of sunlight shining on her. She sits up, then goes to the hatch. She peers through the gaps in the hatch, then slowly lifts it up. She closes her eyes for a moment when she finds that David is still lying in the doorway, his feet inside the motel room. She removes the hatch and drops down into the room. As she crawls over to David, one of the masked killers steps out from the bathroom. She looks over her shoulder at him, then gets to her feet and races across the forecourt. She comes to a halt and looks back over her shoulder. Behind some trees is their car, and she races over to it. She climbs into the driver's seat and finds a screwdriver rammed in the ignition. As she struggles with it, one of the killers runs up behind her and over the car. He throws himself through the glass sunroof and scrabbles for her as she gets the engine to fire up. Driving erratically, she puts her foot down while the attacker's legs wave precariously out of the sunroof. As she heads towards one of the motel rooms, the other masked man appears. The car smashes into him and pins him up against the far wall inside. She's been protected by an airbag, but blood drips from the lifeless body of the man in the roof. The man pinned by the front of the car loses the fight for his life as he rips the mask from his face. It's the mechanic from the night before. The manager's smashing his way through the connecting motel room doors. Amy races out of the room to the pickup truck, but there are no keys in it. Turning to the reception, she hurries inside and locks the door. The manager finds the car and the two dead bodies in the motel room, and he bashes the rear window with anger. Amy tries the phone in reception, then makes her way through to the office. As the manager is caught on camera striding across the gravel, Amy closes the hatch and brings a metal shelving unit down on top of it. She tries the phone, but the wire has been ripped from it. Hearing the reception doorbell, she grabs a mallet from a table and makes her way slowly through the bedsit room. She opens the door into the reception area and, with a mallet held out in front of her, she steps out. Moving tentatively behind the reception desk, she peers over it, but no one's there. Turning, she looks up to where one pistol remains on the gun display above the door. She desperately tries to reach it, but the manager grabs her and wraps a telephone wire around her neck. The gun topples from the display onto the floor. He pulls her backwards into the bedsit and throws her across the table. Now on the floor, she gasps for breath, but manages to scratch him on the cheek.
Fucking bitch! Fuck!
She drags herself back into the office, but clutching his cheek, he follows her and punches her repeatedly. Watching her closely, he wraps the phone cable around his hand and shoves it into his coat pocket.
Fuck!
He grabs his camera and drags her along by her hair.
You fucking bitch, come on!
Get up there! Get up there, I said! Put your head up. Think you were gonna walk out of here, huh? Fucking bitch! Put your head up. Look here. I should have killed you last night. That's what I should have done. I could have fucking killed you last night, and I should have fucking killed you last night. Now shut the fuck up and get your face up. Look at me. Get your face up. Hey! Huh? You think you can fuck with this? You think you can fuck with me? Hey, look at me. Look in my eyes. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Hey, look at me!
Fuck you!
Having kicked him in the groin, she gets away from him, but he catches her behind the reception desk. He slams her against it, then up against the wall, before throwing her heavily to the floor. She lands on the fallen pistol. Suddenly, she's pointing it at him. She shoots him in the chest, and he drops first to his knees, then onto his belly. He frowns before slumping forward, and the life drains from his eyes. Breathing heavily, she backs away from him and, still carrying the gun, runs out to David. Dropping down to her knees next to him, she places a hand on the back of his head and gently strokes his hair. Suddenly, he starts to shake and he rolls over.
Help.
With a gun in her hand, she goes back to the reception and looks down at the manager's body. A pool of blood has formed around him, and she drops to her knees to reach into his coat pocket. She tries one, then in the other, she finds the telephone cable. In the office, she connects up the telephone and plugs it in.
We're at the Pinewood Motel. I don't know the address, but please, you have to hurry.
An officer already responded to that.
No, and they killed him. Please, you can't let my husband die.
Okay, someone's on their way.
She makes her way back out past the manager's body and over to David. As she kneels down next to him, he rolls over a little and reaches for her. She kisses his face. She kisses him again, and they stare at one another, now alone on the concrete path of a cheap, unassuming motel on a sunny day.